and so are you, to Wine About History. I'm your host, Max, and here we are after our hiatus with a new episode for you guys. This one is about the Battle of Alia. Like most people who like history, I've always wondered what made Rome crazy, psychotic. Why did this little city-state decide that they were going to conquer the whole world one day? At least their world. Well, turns out it is the Battle of Alia and what happened there. Before Rome ruled everything from Egypt to England, they were just a city-state in the middle of Italy. In fact, during their early republic years, specifically in the year 387, they were recently gone to war with the Etruscans, a different tribe that lived in the area. And around that same time, the Gauls, a Celtic people, had invaded in the south, probably for land or just riches. This Gallic tribe were led by the warrior king Brennus and his tribe of Senones. Senones is what they were called by the Italians. We don't know what they called themselves. And they marched into northern Italy. They were 30,000 strong. Now, it's kind of hard to imagine 30,000 strong. So for those of you who like sports, imagine about half an NFL stadium full. That's about 30,000 people. And the Senones, they fought the Etruscans and northern Italians until they got to the town of Clusium. I'm going to try and pronounce these correctly. Now, the Etruscans had been to war with Rome in the past. However, this was the city of Clusium had complex diplomatic ties with Rome. In fact, just recently, the Romans had crushed the city of Vai after a 10-year war with them. And they see a Vai, it's V-E-I-I. The real scholars can correct me in the comments. they fled the city. The Etruscans of Vai fled the city. Well, Clusium was threatened by the Senones, and they asked Rome for help. Rome responded to this invasion by sending the sons of Fabius and Bustus to confront Brennus and his fearsome horde. The Gauls told the sons of Fabius, who are sometimes called Fabii, the pair of them, that they had no quarrel, no problem with the Romans, but they had a right to all the Etruscan lands they had conquered and intended to conquer. Allegedly, and I say allegedly because something very important to understand when you're reading Roman history, they wrote this. And they tend to write this stuff as propaganda. Anyways, the Gauls' answer to that question, what right did they have? They, and I quote, "They carried the right in their weapons, and that everything belonged to the brave." Classic. So here's what happened after that. When the Senones fought the Etruscans of Clusium, the envoys joined the Etruscans, and one of Fabius's sons speared a Roman chieftain. The Gauls then suspended their attack for a council of war. The younger men just said, "Let's just attack Rome now." Where the elders said, "No, let's send an envoy, let's ask for peace." And their terms were simple. So the Gauls sent an envoy to Rome. Their price for peace was the Fabii brothers. However, Romans being Roman and arrogant, they said, "No, we're not going to do that. In fact, screw you. They instead elected the people, because this is during the early republic, the people elected the Fabii brothers to consular tribunes because their father was very popular at the time. So imagine from the Gaul perspective, You're at war. Someone comes in, kills your chieftain, someone you don't have a war with, don't have a problem with, a quarrel with. And then you say to them, hey, please hand over the murderers. They say, no, in fact, we're going to celebrate them. Which is typical Roman arrogance and typical Roman diplomacy. So there would be war. And that brings us to the actual battle. To set the scene here, this is not the Rome we know now with the Lorica segmentata, the iron plates, the short swords, the centurion with the sort of mohawk, red bit of horse hair on his helmet. This is a different time. They were copying the Greek hoplites. Hop and fighting in a phalanx, which is a big square full of spears. A hoplite typically had a helmet, breastplate, spear, shield, and short stabbing sword. There was about 15,000 Romans and their allies. And they ranged from veterans from the Etruscan Wars to new recruits, militiamen essentially. The Senonans, on the other hand, were 30,000 strong, so they were numbered 2 to 1. In their culture, they were often the warrior class was often raised from birth to fight. They liked long, straight swords. Everyone used spears. Spears were the queen of the battlefield until the 1700s. Even in the 1600s, people loved pikes. They liked long, straight swords, and they're also famous for very, very good metalworking. They also liked oblong shields. They wore torques, which is basically a piece of metal that wraps around the neck and is solid, unlike a necklace. They all liked to wear jewelry. They liked to have just long, braided mustaches go down, often decorated with silver beads. And they often fought wearing no armor. In fact, they often fought wearing nothing at all. Because at that time, dirty clothes could get into your wounds and cause infections. Only war chiefs and professional soldiers who did this all the time typically wore armor. And the Gauls were typically taller, broader, than the Romans, and had a reputation for being fierce barbarian warriors. Now, this is the Roman perspective. They weren't as smart as them, but they were braver, stronger, and dangerous. And man to man, were very hard to kill. A lot of them also would put white clay in their hair, grow out their hair long, like a mane, or put white clay in it and spike it up to honor the horse god of war named Epona. So you have a very distinct different cultures, even though they have the same genetic ancestors. And so I want you to imagine you've got a horde of 30,000 strong wild barbarians and would look like Greek hoplites, about half of them, outnumbered 2 to 1 on one side. Normally in the stories, the disciplined warriors win, right? And the rampaging evil horde loses. But as you're about to see, it doesn't always happen. Now, the Allia is a brook, and the area around it is full of hills. And the Romans thinned out their line because they were worried about being flanked. So their center was weaker than normal. And they took their inexperienced reserves, who were kind of poorly armed, didn't have as good equipment, and put them on top of a hill on the right flank, thinking that hill would give them the high ground advantage, keep them strong, keep them there, they'll be good. However, Brennus was worried about his left flank, so he saw the warriors on top of the hill and sent his best warriors to rush the phalanx. The Gauls brushed aside the spears after some intense fighting and drove the reserves down the hill. Keep in mind, these reservists were not professional fighters. They were probably farmers, part-timers. And in their panic, they scared the whole army. Then after they fled and the flank was taken by his best warriors, so now the Roman right side is compromised. They're scared because now they have to fight these guys on their right and the warriors on their front. The whole rest of the army charged. Brennus gave a signal. Their carinxes, trumpets, and horns blew, and all 30,000 charged a scared Roman army. And I'm going to quote Livy here, a contemporary historian. None of the Romans were slain while actually fighting. They were cut down from behind while hindering one another's flight in a confused, struggling mass. Now, the center and left flank, while trying to get away, drowned in the nearby Tiber River, trying to get to the walled city of Veia. I'm going to look up how to pronounce this, I swear. I will not fix it in post. They fled there, and they held it. But the right flank, instead, ran back to the city of Rome, which didn't have a wall, just had an earth ditch. Ran away to where the women and children were. And about little less than a third of the army survived between the drowning, the stabbings, and who knows what else. So the Gauls began to loot the bodies and probably drink. Gauls are known for partying after a good victory, giving Rome 3 days to prepare. The clergy left, many of the peasants left, everyone who could leave basically left. The warriors and the Senate, they stayed. But they were in such a hurry, they allegedly didn't even leave the door open. So they decided that they would flee up to the Capitoline Hill and hold up there, because the hill is somewhat defendable. It's basically almost a cliff in some places. It is a cliff in some places. And they got ready to put up a stouter defense. The Gauls found the city with no sentries, no troops on the earth rampart, and even the door open, they thought it was a trap. But then they came into the city, attacked anyways, and burned and killed the city, slaughtered anyone who was still around, hiding in their homes, while the leaders, the Senate, looked on from the hill, unable to do anything. Then the Gauls attacked the hill. They were very confident in their victory, but the Romans were desperate. They knew they would all be slaughtered, and the idea of Rome and its republic would probably be gone forever. So they waited halfway up the hill, just above where it got steepest. The Gauls interlocked their shields, got them close to protect from missiles, and started marching up the hill. And the Romans waited and waited and waited and charged down hard and fast and scattered the Gauls. They used a mixture of desperation and physics to run down the steepest portion of the hill and crash into them. Now, tribal leaders like Brennus and tribal warriors like the Senonans, they aren't an army where you throw waves and waves and waves of men trying to break something. They're brothers, cousins, in-laws, clans, and other family units like that. In fact, in Celtic society, a family unit, if something happened to one of them, in their mind it happened to all of them. So if someone got something stolen, all of them lost something, the thing that was stolen. And that intense relationship is one of the reasons that they often didn't fight with the traditional modern style military like the Romans did, the Greeks did. And Brennus didn't want to lose any more of his cousins or brothers. It would just be a costly, useless assault. He held a council and he decided to split his army in half. Half would search to resupply their dwindling food, and the other half would continue the siege. Now, while this is going on, the army at Veii held off Etruscan attacks, because not all of them were friends with the Romans. And it swelled with allies from local Ardea and Latium. And an exiled general named Marcus Furius Camillus, which is a great name, united the army, and by a secret messenger from Rome, he was declared dictator of Rome, which at the time, a lot of you know, that just meant he was in charge for 6 months to a year, depending on my lack of recall. But it means he was in charge, until the threat to Rome was over. So he slaughtered what Gauls he could, but he really didn't have the strength to fight the encampment outside of Rome with only less than a third of the army around. That kind of depends on who you ask, but we'll get to that. And after 7 months, things were starting to get bad. And the Gauls even nearly got in. They found a weak spot in the Capitolian Hill, and depending on which version of the story, they either formed a human pyramid or just climbed up the cliff. They were so quiet and stealthy, even the guard dogs didn't wake up. But the sacred temple geese of Juno started squawking. In fact, they started squawking and squawking so loudly that they woke everyone up. The guards woke up, the people woke up, and a veteran named Marcus Manilius Capitolinus attacked them. He cut the hands off of one, slammed his shield so hard into another that he flew off the cliff, and the rest of the guards came up, pushed them off the cliff, and threw javelins, throwing spears, down and scattered the rest. That was really their only great victory, fending off the attack. The Gauls were confident they could just starve them out, and they did. It took 7 months. Disease hurt both sides, and the Romans decided Camillus couldn't come and save them. So they offered to bribe the Gauls. Gauls, who were also suffering from disease, said, sure. Their price was 1,000 pounds of gold. Now keep in mind, that isn't gold like today. Gold, 1,000 pounds of gold right now is an insane amount of money. But they didn't have strip mining like we do. They didn't have industrialized mining like we do. 1,000 pounds of gold was pretty much everything the city had. They were taking the jewelry off the leaders and Senate members and their wives to pay for this. And so, for those who don't know what a traditional scale looks like, imagine a T. And at the top of the T, there are chains that go down on each side, either end, and little bowls attached to the chains. You put weights on one side, and there's a pivot at the top of the T where the vertical the vertical line meets the horizontal cross piece at the top, and the bowls at the bottom, you put weights on one side and whatever you're weighing on the other side, and it pivots. So if it's too heavy or too light, it won't be even, but if it's even, it will be stable. They'll be at the same height, each of the bowls. And the Romans noticed that the weights the Gauls brought were heavier than usual, so that they would have to pay more on gold. And it was a very important moment in history, because the Roman Senate called them out on it. Brennus took out his sword. Now, swords are heavy. They're not 10 pounds. They're not as heavy as people make them look like in movies. They're typically anywhere between 2 to 3 pounds, a long sword. And he dropped it on the weight end. It's still heavy. Dropped it on the end where the weights are and said, woe to the vanquished. Essentially saying, what are you going to do about it? There's nothing you can do about it. We've won. You're bribing us to leave. Pay us. And they did. And here's kind of where the narrative changes. The narrative changes because it splits in different places. Depending on who you ask, the Gauls took the money, left. Rome came back together, and Camillus protected Rome and defeated the Gauls at different times in history. But, and one other historian, who ironically had family ties to Camillus' descendants, or was either they were either friends or related. I've read different reports on that. Said that Camillus came in, defeated the Gauls, and brought all the gold back. Remember, most history is propaganda, so we'll see. Who knows? But it's most likely the Gauls took the money and left. Now, the reason I said this was so important is because the Romans never got over this. They were kind of like the nerd that got bullied once, took it personally, got pissed off, and became a UFC or boxing champion. Or became the biggest, meanest bully on the playground. They got rid of the phalanx and adopted the more famous maniple, which is rows of 60 to 120 men. They didn't use spears anymore. They used javelins. They threw them and would run in with short stabbing swords, which would become the gladius, which we all know and history nerd out about. And the tall, curved, square shields we know called the scutums. They also, the maniples also famously have new recruits in the front, men with some experience in the middle, and the hardened veterans in the back. The earth wall was raised and backed with a 12 feet thick and 24 foot tall stone wall all around Rome. They also did something pretty gruesome. If you like dogs, skip this part. They had a yearly tradition where they crucified dogs to punish them as a species for not alerting them about the sneaky Gauls, and then feted the geese, celebrated geese. And it was, but now the thing with this, they have a yearly reminder about how close they came to destruction. That's almost like America every year getting pissed that the War of 1812 was tied and making everyone drill with guns and making it a cultural memory that we'll never lose a war again, or do something similar with Korea or Vietnam, making it permanent that we're not going to forget we nearly lost or did lose. That's going to change a culture. And that woe to the defeated mark seemed to kind of resonate in their mind. It almost came like a secret, well, not open secret slogan of Rome, because when it came to the diplomacy, those of you who read Rome, it's almost like they're always asking for a fight so they could win and prove to themselves that they're the strongest. And they would just go to war with Celts and Gauls for no reason other than they could, over and over and over again. This really seems to me, and many other people, what changed Rome from a powerful city-state with many allies and enemies to a people dedicated to becoming the biggest, meanest, nastiest bully on the playground, so no one would ever mess with them again. So, if you ever wonder why they did it, it's because of the Battle of Alia. Thank you for listening. It's so good to have all of you back.